You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me my good friend, John Rubino. DollarCollapse.com is where you should go to check out all the good stuff that John provides and people that he reads and passes on. Lots of goodies there, and one of my favorite things that he does every week is provides his top 10 videos of the week, and some really great stuff there, and we might touch on one of those videos in my discussion with John. Now, thanks for coming back with me today, John.
Hey, Jay, great to be back. And you know, I think you had two videos in the top 10 in this last week, right?
Well,
yeah. Michael Oliver kind of was really encouraging.
Yeah, and Alistair McLeod. And I thank you, John, for doing that, because I appreciate that. We do have some great guests on this show, including yourself, and thanks again for being with us. And DollarCollapse.com is a great site to go to for some honesty in the markets, and I think, you know, it's just good to sometimes step away from the mainstream and get ready to look for some things that you might not see by sticking only with the mainstream press. So we titled our show today, "Will Democrats Be Gold Friendly?" And so I'd like to start out, John, by asking you what your thoughts are just in general. My thinking is that we were in a heap of trouble no matter who prevailed. If Trump remained on as president and if the Republicans kept the Senate, we would still have a lot of issues that were really daunting. But just maybe sum things up in terms of where we are now as a country and our ability to finance enormous amounts of debt that the government is printing, is creating in trying to fix things for all of us.
Well, to put it bluntly, we're broke. You know, we can't fix any of this because we've already used up all the money that we would normally use to fix all of our many problems. And it's not stopping. We're going to borrow probably in total another $7 trillion this year after the same amount last year. And it's completely unsustainable. So I don't think that's a surprise to your listeners, right? We all know that we're headed off a financial cliff. And, you know, as you said, maybe there's some questions about whether the Democrats or the Republicans will take us across the cliff or over the cliff faster. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a fairly safe bet that the Democrats will turbocharge the process just because there's a lot more they want to spend money on than mm-hmm. the Republicans. But, you know, we were going to run $1 trillion deficits for as far as the eye can see under Trump. So there's not all that much more the Democrats can do, but they will do more because they intend to bail out the states and localities that have ruined their own, you know, local economies through underfunding their pension plans. Mm-hmm. And they're going broke individually, regardless of what happens in the rest of the country. But the Democrats won't let that happen. They will bail them out. So that's an extra couple $1 trillion on top of whatever the Republicans would have done if they were in office. And, mm-hmm. and you know, then there's student loans. That's $1 trillion or so that it'll take to bail them. It just goes on and on. There are mm-hmm. so many entities in need of a bailout right now. And, you know, mostly because of the lockdown in the short run, but they would have needed those bailouts eventually anyhow, because we were always heading in this direction. Now, the pandemic and the resulting lockdowns have brought a lot of future trouble into the present. So this is the year when a lot of it blows up. And as for the Democrats being friendly to gold, there are two answers to that. One is that philosophically, they're absolutely not friendly to gold, because they believe in fiat currencies, which the governments control, because they love the power of being able to create money out of thin air. So they don't like gold in the sense that gold is kind of a shadow form of money right now, that when it goes up, it illustrates the failure of the current monetary system. So Democrats don't like that. But their policies are extremely gold friendly. Because if they're going to inflate away the dollar at an accelerating rate, that's great for precious metals. So maybe Well, there are two bright spots, I think, in Democrats running the show. And one is that on the environment, they'll be less destructive than the Republicans. And they'll enrich gold bugs faster than the Republicans would have. So, Jay, you and I and a lot of your listeners will probably make more money in the next 4 years than we made in the last 4 years. And that's, you know, it's small comfort considering all the suffering that inflation and currency crises and general fiscal mismanagement bring to most people. Mm-hmm. But those are the bright spots, you know, and it's not nothing, you know, to have your stack of silver coins go from $25 an ounce to $200 an ounce in 4 years, which could easily happen. And that means that the gold bugs, today's preppers, you know, today's owners of junior mining stocks will be the ones with a lot of capital at some point in the future. And it's going to be our responsibility to help rebuild, you know, to help our friends and family. So anyhow, complex situation with some, you know, some bright spots, but mostly not.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how many of the young people are really owning gold stocks. It seems like they might be owning Bitcoin and other things that are sort of cool for young people to own. But that's maybe something we'll get to in a moment. But if you have any thoughts, go ahead.
Oh, my God, Jay, that's one of the most fascinating stories out there right now, because the government gave a bunch of stimulus money to millennials who basically are, you know, they grew up as gamers. They're very comfortable playing video games. And at the same time, free stock trading apps emerged like Robinhood. So not only are these guys getting free money, but they're able to put it to work gambling on penny stocks for free. So my son, my 24-year-old son, is doing this. And let me, I've got a text from him here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Basically, what they're doing is they get together on forums online where thousands of traders like this get, and they identify stocks that have a big short interest. And then they attack those shorts by buying the stock and trying to force the hedge funds who are short the stock into short covering. And then, you know, a lot of stocks are just being made incredibly volatile by, like, there's one called GameStop that went from 10 to 170, down below 100. Now it's back up in the hundreds. And now here's the text from my son. Let's see. Apparently, there's a 20 million short index or interest in keeping BlackBerry's price under 25. If we break that, the shorts have to cover and we own them. That's my 24-year-old son. And, you know, the shorts he's talking about are Citadel and Greenlight and Goldman and J.P. Morgan's prop trading desk. You know, so these kids now are preying on the, you know, institutional traders out there who used to be able to short stocks in the expectation of a reasonably orderly market. And now they're being targeted. They're being treated like prey. And it's a poetic justice. But of course, it won't end well. But it's just hilarious to watch it while it's happening.
Well, John, this morning you and I were talking, and you said that this whole thing reminds you an awful lot of the dot-com era. Of course, there were some companies that emerged from that dot-com era to become, you know, big IT companies of the day that are really dominant companies now. But could you maybe just talk a little bit about what you're seeing? I mean, is this example, I guess, is where a lot of young people who get involved in the market who really don't have that much experience, haven't maybe ever been through a really bloody bear market. That seemed to have been the case with the dot-com era as well. A lot of young people with money jumping into the markets and causing an awful lot of froth. Of course, they didn't cause the froth. The froth is created by the money that's created out of nothing and thrown into the economy. But so do you really see a comparison? Are you making a comparison, as I understand it, with what you and I both witnessed in 2000?
Oh, yeah. This is eerily reminiscent of the tech stock bubble. Actually, let me back up just a little bit and tell you about me and bubbles. Because I've been in them my whole life. You know, I read a gold bug investment book when I was in college, just as the gold and silver markets exploded in the 1970s. You know, and I watched that with interest. So I saw that first bubble. Then in the 1980s, I was a junk bond analyst, just as the junk bond bubble blew up and almost took the whole economy down. And then in the 1990s, I was a tech stock columnist for thestreet.com, which was a tech stock-centric website back then.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so I followed that bubble up until it blew up. And then in 2003, I wrote a book on the housing bubble. And so was embedded in that bubble. So, you know, I've been in bubbles my whole life. And this bubble is iconic. It's exactly like the other bubbles, except it's orders of magnitude bigger. You know, those other bubbles were sector specific, junk bonds, tech stocks, housing. This is everything and everywhere. We know we've got a housing bubble now. We've got a tech stock bubble going on. We've got a bond bubble, and we've got a new bubble in cryptocurrencies that you know, didn't even exist during those previous bubbles. And then we've got them all happening at once. So that's why, James Turk and I wrote a book called The Money Bubble to illustrate the point that it's not financial sectors now, it's our money that is in a bubble. And today people call this the everything bubble because pretty much every major sector you can point to is behaving in a bubbly way. Now, these kids who are trading are very much like the day traders during the 1990s who traded tech stocks. Even, mm-hmm. you know, they were total beginners, but they were able to day trade. You needed a little bit more gear back then to do it, but you could still do it. You know, you could day trade. And a lot of these guys, and they're like the house flippers in the 2000s.
Yeah.
People who were dentists or hairdressers or whatever started buying houses, painting them a little bit, and then flipping them for big profits. People who had no experience in the industry making industry professional kinds of money. So today you've got Robinhood traders who are buying little stocks, and then the little stocks go up because there's so much money flowing into them. They sell them, they make some money, they move on to the next, and they've gotten incredibly cocky, you know, because literally they've only been in the stock market, a lot of them, for months, not mm-hmm. years, just months. So all they know is this world where you buy a 15-cent stock and it goes to 45 cents, and then you sell it. And then you get together and you force a bunch of hedge funds into covering their shorts, and then you you make a fortune when they do that. So, yes, this is what happens in bubbles, because one of the characteristics of a bubble is that regular people start making insane amounts of money doing mm-hmm. things that professionals used to find difficult. Mm-hmm. So we're there, you know. So when this might go on for a while because the government is still flooding the system with cash, but when that ends, this bursts in a way that's going to make like 2000 the tech stock bust or the housing bubble bust seem like kid stuff. This is going to be so much bigger and so much more widespread.
Yeah, because the money that's going in to blow up this bubble has been a magnitude larger than what we saw in those previous episodes. But I want to bring to our listeners' attention a video that's on your top 10 that features Michael Saylor, the CEO of a company called micro.com, I think it is. And he made a very powerful argument for Bitcoin. I'm telling you, as a gold bug, I'm listening to this and I'm saying, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I'm almost tempted to put a big percentage of my portfolio in Bitcoin now. Maybe I buy GBTC or something like that. And I mentioned that to you earlier today, and you sort of chuckled and said, well, yeah, I mean, that's what reminds, you know, you heard people back in 2000 that were just as convincing about the dot-com things that went to zero.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he's wrong, because you're right, he makes a very powerful case that
very powerful.
Bitcoin is a new technologically advanced monetary system that will basically just demonetize gold, silver, government bonds, fiat currencies, everything, and become the world's reserve asset. Very powerful argument. However, back in the 1990s and back in the 2000s, there were experts who made just as powerful arguments for house prices always going up because mm-hmm. demographics this and God's not making any more land, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And back in the 1990s, it was, optical networking this and cash on the sidelines and baby boomer demographic.
Yeah.
You know, it was all that stuff that when you heard it, you thought, wow, that is very convincing. Maybe earnings don't matter. Maybe Amazon literally can go to infinity. You know, that's possible. And so I'm kind of leery of really powerful arguments, just because I've heard so many in the past being kind of accidentally in all these bubbles. So, you know, you can't let yourself be sucked into these things, even though, you know, it's not a guarantee that they're wrong, but they are a symptom. Arguments like that are a symptom of a bubble. You know, you get experts, you get brilliant people saying really convincing things with absolute certainty that turned out to be wrong in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, with cryptos, I'm having a lot of trouble fitting crypto terminology and the things that people say make it, you know, make Bitcoin the next great monetary system into my current understanding of markets. And so it could be that they just don't fit and they are fatally flawed and they're not going to work out. Or it could be that I'm like a, you know, horse and buggy driver looking at my first car in 1990 or in 1890.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just am unable at this point in my life to get my head around these new concepts, although the new concepts are valid. So I recognize that the whole paradigm shift thing is possible, but these kinds of statements from experts are also exactly the kind of thing you hear in markets or in bubble markets over and over again. So you have to look at them also in that sense, you know, the sense that this is what you should expect. You should expect kids like these Robinhood traders to be doing extraordinary things and making huge amounts of money with no real experience. And you should expect experts to be telling you that there's a reason why this is happening. You know, I'm short Tesla. And I publicize that. So I'm getting a lot of that about Tesla, how, you know, it doesn't matter that their P.E. ratio is 1700. And it doesn't matter that they're now more valuable than the next 10 car makers in the world combined. Because they are doing this, this, and this. You know, the story is so amazing. And so you have to kind of guard yourself against amazing stories in bubbles, because those stories will blow up on you. Not all of them, but a fair percentage, and they'll take your savings with you if you're not careful.
Every now and then the markets turn around and go the other way, and they're very humbling. Investing over the long run is a very humbling experience, and you know, we've all learned that. And one person that has really known that is Jerry Grantham, and he's written an article recently called "Waiting for the Last Dance." He's referring to this bubble that we're talking about now as being his last dance, the last time, because he is an elderly, you know, older guy that doesn't figure he'll be around for the next one, perhaps. And I'd like to just read something and get your reaction to it, John. This is sort of an executive summary from what Jeremy wrote. This was on January 5th. He says, and I quote, "The long, long bull market since 2009 has finally matured into a fully fledged epic bubble, featuring extreme overvaluation, explosive price increases, frenzied insurance, a frenzied issuance, and hysterically speculative investor behavior. I believe this event will be recorded as one of the great bubbles of financial history, right along with South Sea Bubble, 1929 and 2000, which you just talked about." He goes on, he says, "These great bubbles are where fortunes are made and lost, and where investors truly prove their mettle. For positioning a portfolio to avoid the worst pain of a major bubble breaking is likely the most difficult part. Every career incentive in the industry and every fault of individual human psychology will work towards sucking investors in. But this bubble will burst in due time, no matter how hard the Fed tries to support it, with consequent damaging effect on the economy and on portfolios. Make no mistake, for the majority of investors today, this could very well be the most important event of your investing lives. Speaking as an old student and historian of markets, it is intellectually exciting and terrifying at the same time. It is a privilege to ride through a market like this one more time." That's Jeremy Grantham. And I must say, John, he sounded an awful lot, in reading that, I'm just thinking about the things you just said. Sounds like you and Jeremy Grantham are pretty much on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, I would never compare myself in any way to Jeremy Grantham, but yeah, I totally agree with everything you said, because this is the biggest bubble of our lifetimes, which is astounding when you think about the bubbles that we've lived through, right? The mm-hmm. tech stock bubble should have been the biggest. The housing bubble should have been the biggest, but yeah. this dwarfs them. So, okay, so the big question is, because, you know, Jay, you and I aren't here just to lament the sad state of the world.
We want to find solutions.
Money. Yes, yeah. That's right. So how do you make money when a bubble bursts? And watch the movie The Big Short, and you'll see one way to do it. You know, you bet against the stuff that all the experts tell you should be piling into, or most of the experts say. And then you wait while you lose money hand over fist because you were too early. And then finally it works out. Everything just falls off the table and you make some order of magnitude more money than you put into it. And that's a really hard thing for almost anybody to do because you've got to get through that period of being too early because it's absolutely, I mean, it's theoretically possible for you to hit the very high with all of your shorts.
No.
But you can't do that really, not in real
very
life.
Very unlikely. So
what you got to do is feather in. You buy, you short something now, you short something else later. You give yourself lots of time with either long-dated options or mutual funds that do the shorting for you or actual stock shorts where you can stay in that short position as long as you want. And you ride the resulting or, you know, the following last phase of the bubble until you get to the bursting of the bubble. And then right. you make a ton of money. And it's psychologically incredibly hard to do.
It is hard.
But that's how you make your fortune in bubbles. Mm-hmm. Now, if you just want to be safe, you go to all cash. Mm-hmm. Or in our case, when we talk about cash, we're saying gold and silver, right?
Right.
Not
exactly.
cash. And so you just go to all physical precious metals, mm-hmm. which might go down a bit during a stock market crash, but will preserve your purchasing power over time. Mm-hmm. And you just wait it out that way, knowing that you're still going to have a lot of value at the end of the process.
But well, I think that's very good advice, John. We're going to have to pretty much leave it go at that. But just to mention that Jeremy is suggesting go to value. He says people have forgotten value. They're going into these growth stocks and you're just completely forgetting value. So he's suggesting going to value. And I would suggest that makes some sense. And certainly if you believe that gold mines that produce gold are values, silver mines are values, there's other value stocks. And he's saying, stay away from the growth stocks. By all means, stay away from those things. The Teslas of this world, I guess you're talking about, and some of the others. That's his advice. And I don't know if he understands gold or not. Chances are he's not a big gold bug. Most of the major guys aren't. But we know, John, from thousands of years of history that gold does retain its purchasing power. And people can laugh at gold bugs if they want to. What's the saying goes? He who laughs last laughs best or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we do really need to keep our eyes on things, John, and I think you gave some very good advice. Is there any one last minute of 30 seconds?
Yeah, actually, on a slightly different subject, I'd like to do a plug for, it's time to get out of these mainstream social media companies. So I closed down the Dollar Collapse Facebook page and my own page and am moving over to WeMe, which is a version of Facebook that doesn't censor you and doesn't spy on you and doesn't sell your information. And so it's a much better social media platform. So, over the next week or so, the Dollar Collapse page will be set up and the Dollar Collapse group will be set up. And so anybody who would like to come over there, join us, you'd be welcome.
Okay. What is the name of it again?
It's WeMe, WeMe.
Oh, excellent. And, okay.
And yeah, it's a version of Facebook without all the bad baggage that Facebook has built up.
Okay, we got to go, John, but we'll talk to you more about that in the future. Folks, that is it for this week. Charles Hugh Smith with me next week, as well as Michael Oliver. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.